and welcome to the All Things Palestinian Canadian podcast, a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. Together, we dive into the realm of what it means to be Palestinian living in Canada. We explore all aspects of Palestinian culture and art, as well as history and politics, to encourage Palestinian pride and engagement. My name is Nur Wattar. I'm the Director of Media, Campus, and Community Development at CJPME and the podcast host for today. Joining the conversation with me is Thomas Woodley, producer of the podcast and president of CJPME. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We have a special guest joining us. She's a Palestinian Canadian based in Waterloo, Ontario, where she has just finished a degree in global studies with a specialization in international development at Wilfrid Laurier University. As part of her program, she also did an option in social entrepreneurship, in which she developed her vision to engage Palestinian Canadian youth more fully in their ethnic heritage. In addition to her studies and project, Ms. Malak Al-Batrouch is president of the UW Student for Palestinian Rights Group, as well as the founder of the KW Kitchener-Waterloo Palestine Organization. Both groups have been extremely active in mobilizing students and community members to oppose Israel's apartheid practices against Palestinians. Malak, it is such a pleasure to have you join us today. I'm so excited to hear from you. Before we start, I want to ask, Malak, just so me and the audience knows, where is your family from within Palestine? And have you ever gotten the chance to visit?
To start off, thank you so much for having me, Noor. I'm so glad to be here and I'm so glad to finally meet all of you. Where my family's from Palestine, is we're from Mejdel, Palestine. It's right on top of Gaza.
Yeah.
And I got the chance, I never lived there, unfortunately, but I got the chance to visit in 2018 with my family. And we visited, we went on a short 1 week trip, and we got to roam the West Bank and the 48, and it was a beautiful experience. And yeah, that's where we saw it there.
That's amazing. So it was pretty recent, so you probably remember a lot of it. Yeah.
No, that's where I think my initial start for my cultural idea came from, actually.
Oh really? Mm-hmm. Oh wow. Okay.
And when you visited, were there any sort of eye-opening experiences for you when you were there?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the main things is that I got to experience firsthand, I think, the treatment of Palestinians. Like, I saw it like really vividly in front of me. Like, before, my family, we used to watch documentaries about it. We used to watch like news channels, but we never really like saw it. And then when we went through checkpoints, we saw the apartheid wall. We saw the difference between like, for example, going through the airport in 48 in Tel Aviv, or going through the airport, the Jordanian borders. Like, we saw those experiences, and that definitely shook us to our core. So mm-hmm. I think those were experiences that we held on till now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is eye opening to be there. And you start comparing the life you live here in Canada and then the lives Palestinians live back home. And it's like, okay, we're on completely different spectrums because there's so much going on there. Mm-hmm. And exactly. It can be terrifying for people who do live there. Mm-hmm. So I know you're very active in your community in Waterloo. And aside from your activism and solidarity work, you've recently launched a new initiative to promote Palestinian heritage about Palestinian diaspora youth. And it is called Spora Scattered. Mm-hmm. Where does the name come from and why did you choose it?
So the name Sporas came from the Latin word diaspora, and the meaning of it is to scatter. Like, that's the original meaning of it. So I decided to use that in my name in order to grab the attention of the audience that I want to target, which is the Palestinian diaspora youth. Mm-hmm. And I decided, okay, I don't want it to be like too harsh of a word, but I wanted to also make it understand that this is like the origins of it. This is, we're scattered like that. Mm-hmm. That is our we've been exiled from.
Yeah.
So, and then the logo of the organization is a dandelion that has the petals falling off from it, which represents the scattering of Palestinians after Israel's occupation in 1948, and how also in a dandelion, when you blow on it, people scatter. So I felt like that kind of like tied into the idea of sporas as well.
That is honestly such a beautiful way of expressing diaspora. Yeah. I feel like it targets the youth very nicely, and it kind of grabs their attention, especially that you said that it's not that harsh of a word. Yeah, it's very interesting. I would have never thought that. Like, when I looked at the logo, I was interested in learning what it's about, like what the meaning behind it is. But I'm very intrigued by it, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm going to make a post about it to explain it more to people, just so they understand.
What I liked about it too is it's very poetic without losing the intensity. you know, a people being pushed into diaspora, being expelled from their lands is, of course, very dramatic and very tragic sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I think the sporas and the logo, it's sort of, it's poetic, it's beautiful, but it's also, you don't lose that intensity, which is very nice. So really, yeah. I was quite impressed when I saw that, among other things. But yeah, well done on that. Absolutely.
And it kind of, I feel what Palestinians went through when they sought refuge somewhere else during the diaspora, I feel like it gives it some sort of, it's a tragedy, but it gives it some sort of beauty, because Palestinians all over the world started their own communities and started their own solidarity work in those communities in hopes of returning one day to Palestine. So I feel like it gives it also, as Tom said, it is really poetic, but it kind of gives it that beauty, and kind of comparing it to a dandelion makes it look like something hopeful, and something hopefully can turn it into something positive in the future.
That's right. They're taking root. I mean, we have a strong Palestinian Canadian community, which has taken root here. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what does SPORAS aim to do? Like, what are its objectives?
So it's stated in like the mission statement, it aims to include the Palestinian diaspora youth within their communities, right? And it focuses on uplifting our Palestinian culture and tradition that's either been lost or forgotten with our Western surroundings, right? So I want to be able to allow these youth to grow up and understand their heritage and background within their Canadian communities more freely and more proudly as well. Like, a lot of the times when we grow up, we're not even just Palestinians, like a lot of people from Arab or Middle Eastern heritage or South Asian heritage, they try to hide that part of their identity because they don't know how to put it in their community. They don't know how to express it with themselves. So they try to hide it away from their Western surroundings. So I feel like by uplifting the diaspora youth from the beginning till they grow up, it'll allow them to celebrate their culture and be more proud of it in their communities, definitely.
Do you feel like you've ran into people who struggle to find their identity as Palestinians or struggle to showcase that to the world, that they're Palestinian?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's where my idea kind of came from as well. Like, I even not even just saw people around me, but even like family members. Like, I have a lot of families that grew up born and raised in Canada, and they didn't have like that touch with their Palestinian roots. But with the difference within my family, I feel like that was a huge part of our family upbringing, to teach us about Palestinian cities, the Palestinian history, constantly watching documentaries with my dad. Like, that was like a huge part of our childhood. And even within our communities, because I lived in the Arab world when I was younger, we were also allowed to express our Palestinian identity more freely, I would say. Mm-hmm. But then when I came here, I realized that it's not that important to them. It's like, oh no, it's just a part of me. Like, it doesn't really matter to express it as much. It's like, no, you can. Like, you can be proud of it and showcase it to the world. You can freely express it. And I feel like that's also something that I'm starting to notice even more within high schools in Canada as well. Like, they're a lot more driven to express their Palestinian heritage and identity, which I'm so proud of. And I feel like that's part of what I'm trying to do as well.
That's amazing.
Well, and I sense some Palestinians. Of course, my wife is Palestinian Canadian, but she's my generation, and a generation beyond yours, Malik. But I sense also that there is a certain taboo in Canadian society. I just actually just an hour ago, I was on a webinar about anti-Palestinian racism in Canada. And I know my wife, when she was growing up, you know, she sometimes didn't really want to get into a political discussion, or she didn't want to sort of enter into that space where there's all these assumptions about who she is if she tells people she's Palestinian. Do you feel there's still some of that going on as well, Malik, in terms of just people being reticent to share who they are because of all the quote unquote baggage that comes with it?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think that it's getting a lot better as we grow older, and as the discussion of Palestine is coming into our society and our communities a lot more. But 110%, like, I would rather, like, when I was younger, or even a lot of my family members or my friends, even they would avoid saying they're Palestinian just so they don't need to deal with the discussion of, oh, what's Palestine, or don't you mean Israel or Pakistan, like all that. So they would just say Canadian, and which is part of our identity, but also it's important to say the Palestinian part as well, to grasp onto that, right? To make sure that it's included within the conversation, and make sure to be able to back it up. Like, even when people are confused about it, be like, okay, no, Palestine, yeah. Palestine is there. Like, it is.
Yeah.
That's in the conversation. Yeah.
And that's what makes me happy about your initiative. And this is, of course, the whole point of this podcast is also to share that Palestinian identity and Palestinian culture in a positive light and showcase that to the Palestinian people in Canada and the Palestinian youth specifically. Mm-hmm. So they can understand and learn where they're from and be proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I want to learn more a bit about Sporaz. So I know when I was looking into Sporaz on Instagram, you mentioned your mission and aim, quoting that you would like to create a platform where Palestinian diaspora youth can learn about their culture and traditions freely within their communities. You mentioned the word freely, which grabbed my attention. It's challenging for Palestinians to openly discuss the diaspora and the events that led to that without it being minimized by outsiders or have the idea neglected as a whole, as we just mentioned. How does Sporaz aim to bring that to the discussion and have it be openly discussed? Furthermore, do you plan on bringing the attention of non-Palestinians to the conversation as well?
Yeah, so I believe that like a lot of the majority of diaspora youth have not had like firsthand experience with the Nakba or the exile from Palestinian homes, like our parents or our grandparents. But however, many of us are still dealing with the consequences of the exile, right? And I feel like that's sometimes overlooked within our upbringing. So similar to older generation, which I don't feel like is talked about enough, right? We don't talk about our experiences or many of us might deal with an identity crisis, I would say, even growing up, be like, I'm Palestinian Canadian, and not understanding how to showcase both of them freely, right? Yeah. And I feel like that's something that I'm aiming to, hopefully, that's what I meant, freely within our communities, to kind of able to bring into that to discussion, right? Bring up our struggles or what we face as Palestinian diaspora youth that are different from our parents or our grandparents as well.
Yeah.
And even how they intertwine with one another.
So I was going to say, and I want to hear what you were going to say to continue, but as you were talking, I was reminded of my father-in-law and his generation, but specifically about him, that there was quite often they didn't want to talk about what happened in 1948. My father-in-law was born in 1930, so he was 18 years old in 1948, and he didn't want to talk about it. And a lot of people in his generation didn't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that had implications for their children and their children. And I wonder if that's because what you were saying is the Nakba has implications for today's generation and in terms of the way people communicate it and relate to it. And I wonder if that was part of what came in or what you meant by that in terms of the Nakba influences even generations to the day and how they think about it and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. Similarly to my grandparents, for example, like it's not brought into discussion, which is totally understandable. Like it's not something that they would love to discuss every time we bring up the topic of Palestine, but it is also something that I feel like it's important for the youth to understand what the heritage is, where it comes from, where the Nakba comes from, what are the experiences that people go through. Something even also that I noticed within the diaspora youth is that it's not that by not knowing these stories, they grasp on the importance of a liberated Palestine. Mm-hmm. They are like, no, it's okay. It's not that it's okay, but it's forgotten within the upbringing, kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's something that's really important with it. And I want to also bring in the non-Palestinians within the community, because I feel like a lot of diaspora youth are not just Palestinian, right? A lot of come from Middle Eastern heritage or South Asian heritage, like I stated before, and they all deal with a lot of the same struggles as well that we might deal with. Not specifically to include the culture of those people, but also talking about it and making them feel heard within the community and making them understand that our struggles might be intertwined or related to each other as well. But yeah, I think it's important.
Mm-hmm. When you said some of them might be, what did you call it? South Asian heritage, or what did you call it? What did you mean by that?
So a lot of the, for example, people that are coming, because I have like Pakistani friends and Indian friends as well, that consider themselves from diaspora as well. They consider themselves of coming to Canada because of their families, because of a better life for the sacrifices of their parents as well. So they consider themselves from diaspora as well. So I feel like that is also something that we should be talked about as well, something that our struggles are intertwined with one another. But yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I thought that's what you might mean, but I wasn't sure. And I wasn't sure our listeners would pick up on that as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's an interesting, absolutely very important point. And it broadens the network of people that better understand what happened in Palestine and what needs to change today. Yeah, mm-hmm, excellent.
Exactly. Yeah. You bring a really interesting point that as a Palestinian, you always focus on your own cause,
mm-hmm,
and you focus on your own struggles, but there's so many people out there, especially in Canada too, that mm-hmm suffer from this that aren't necessarily Palestinian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. I think it all brings all the struggle intertwines. Like, there's always a saying that we say within protests or within mm-hmm our communities, we're not liberated till we're all liberated. I think that's like really important, because like they all intertwine with one another, and that's the truth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right. If we stamp out all racism, then everybody is free from the burden of racism. And yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
Cultural knowledge about Palestine, whether it's sharing and reteaching its history, practicing and implementing its cultural traditions daily, and proudly identifying one's background as unapologetically Palestinian, whether you're a refugee, immigrant, or a Palestinian citizen, is extremely important. How does sports aim to bring that to the youth of Canada who aren't as in touch with their background or don't know much about Palestine's history and culture? And what are some activities that sports will carry out in order to revive the Palestinian culture and tradition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm hoping to create a lot of communal events that will allow Palestinian youth to relearn their culture and their history and their traditions. Mm-hmm. So for example, I'm hoping to create a Tathriz event, which is Palestinian embroidery, and showcasing how rich the culture is. I feel like now that I'm noticing a lot more how much it's brought into discussion as well, mm-hmm, because we saw recently the thobes being worn by Israelis or by Western, I think it was from the beauty pageant. They were wearing our Palestinian thobes, but they weren't us. So I feel like after that, people were like, they were angry about it, because it's like, mm-hmm, this is our culture, this is our heritage.
Yeah.
Well, how is it not being represented by us? And I feel like everyone just started talking more about Tathriz and then its history and how different cities have different thobes and how we should talk about it more. So I feel like that's something that I want to bring up as well.
Definitely.
And a lot of it is also, not only am I hoping to do the fun stuff of culture and Tathriz, but also the history of the cities of Palestine as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's something that's being lost in conversation. And a lot of times a part of Israeli occupation is to take away our city names.
Yeah.
So Hebron, for example, Al-Khalil is the mm-hmm original name, Al-Quds, Jerusalem, and Akka, Acre. So like a lot of those names are not being brought up within conversation. So I feel like allowing Palestinians and Palestinian youth to understand the city's names and the history of them will allow us to be closer to a liberated Palestine and not further apart from our origins as well.
Absolutely, 100%. Because that's what will make you be proud of where you come from, mm-hmm, and it will make you understand better your identity, and it will bring you back closer to your culture and roots. Exactly. And I feel like that's so important, especially when it comes to the youth, because that's when you start. You start at an early age and you kind of build that momentum up. And I feel mm-hmm like the youth have so much power nowadays to fight for Palestine. I feel like they have mm-hmm so much power to stand up for our cause and to stand in solidarity, because past generations have gone through so much when it comes to the Palestinian cause and fighting for it. And I feel like the matter is in the hands of the youth nowadays. I feel like they have the power to have their voices heard, especially when it comes to social media. I feel like, especially that sports is through social media, I feel like it will make it very prominent on social media, and it will even grab people's attention from outside of Canada or outside of Waterloo. So it doesn't have to refrain to staying within the community. And I feel like the posts that you have shared so far on your social media bring that infographics to life, and they share that information to people who are outsiders as well. So mm-hmm that's, I really like the idea of Sporaz, and especially with the world of social media, I feel like it really opens a door mm-hmm to reach as many people as possible.
Yeah. You know, I was, I think you made some really good points there as well, Malik, in terms of the naming of the cities first. One of the things that people pointed out with Russia's invasion of Ukraine is that all the media started using the Ukrainian pronunciation of Ukraine's capital city, Kyiv. And, you know, and a colleague of mine pointed out, it's like, why don't they do that for the Palestinians, right? And why don't they call it Al-Quds or Al-Khalil and so on? And it's something that, you know, in theory, Palestinians should be free to talk about, to push for, and from time to time, it should be, you know, referred to in these ways. And I think also your point about the individual history of the different cities, I wanted to make sure I understood what you meant as well. So, for instance, you're talking about, like, for instance, was it Nablus is known for its soap making industry? Is that right? And what are some of the other examples that you wanted to mention
Haifa
in terms
of Haifa? Is known for like oranges,
yeah,
and Yaffa as well.
I believe Nablus is also known for, like, that's one of the things that we're told when we went there, was that was known for its knefa as well. Like,
yeah,
knefa. Oh, that's right. Much, that's, yeah. Right. Yeah. That's right.
Bethlehem is known. I think Bethlehem is known for its rich history in within the Christian population of Palestine as well.
Yeah,
one of the most amazing things about it as well. But yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, one of my close friends, actually, he was the best man at my wedding. Aww. He's from Bethlehem, mm-hmm. And yeah, he had all sorts of really fascinating stories from Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite the city. I love Bethlehem. I used to visit it all the time when I was a child, and it was just my favorite part of any week that we used to go there.
It's so beautiful.
I know you mentioned that there's several things that kind of inspired you to start this initiative.
So the beginning was the fact that I noticed the gap within the diaspora youth and their culture and their Palestinian heritage as well. And noticing how it was a communal thing, and it was not just within Canada. It was in a lot of countries where Palestinian scattered to or exiled to. And I felt like that was something that was really important to bring up as understanding the basic level of also Palestinian history, like even before, prior to the Nakba as well, and prior to the Israeli occupation.
About
it as well.
I feel like there's so much history that isn't talked about when it comes to Palestine. It always usually starts from the 1948 and so on. I feel like that's the most time it's talked about, like 1948 and then till now, what's been happening. But the past, Palestine is just, I feel like it's not talked about a lot in our culture as also. I feel like it's always disregarded what Palestine was before. So I feel like that's very important as well to shed light on that too.
And it's important, obviously, to talk about 1948
absolutely, yeah.
But I feel like it's also for the youth to understand that Palestine wasn't just that. It wasn't just 48 and the Nakba. It was more than that. That's what they're taking from us as right now.
Yeah.
And I got the idea around like a year ago when I was given the opportunity to create a social enterprise as part of my last year in university. As part of my social entrepreneurship option. And I didn't necessarily want it to be like a profit driven enterprise, but I wanted it to be community building. And I felt like the community that I wanted to target was Palestinian youth within.
So Malik, I really liked what you said there about the history and Palestine being more than just what happened in 1948. And I think, Noor, you brought up earlier about the Jaffa oranges and the Haifa oranges and so on. And that is so true that there was such rich history. And I at this point, I'll make a plug for a project of the CJ Pimi Foundation, which is this photo exhibition we have, which is called Dispossessed but Defiant, where we have one section of the exhibition is about the Palestinians, another section about the indigenous people, another section about the blacks under apartheid South Africa. And that's one thing that we try to highlight, is that before these people were dispossessed, they had such a rich history, rich culture, rich traditions, and very flourishing society, you know. And in fact, my father-in-law, his family owned a lot of land in Jaffa, and they had orange plantations. And you can see pictures, get historic photos of boats loaded with Jaffa oranges headed for Europe from Palestine. And it's so funny that Israel sort of claimed that and said, well, these are, no, Jaffa oranges are Israeli. Well, not really. So I don't know. Did you have some thoughts in terms of what was some of the rich history that you had in mind, Malik, in terms of talking about the richness and the need to not lose that, not have all that eclipsed by what happened in 1948?
Yeah, I was actually I'm working on a post right now about the fruits of Palestine. Mm-hmm. And how each city has its own, like not each city, but most of the cities have they're distinct from their fruits as well, like even citrus. And one of the things that shocked me the most was how the oranges and the citrus industry in Palestine was the economic drive of, mm-hmm. of Palestinian politics, economic and social community. And they drove all the way to Europe, and that's just not talked about. Like, I didn't know about it until I was researching more about it and understanding that, we have such a huge history of Yefa oranges. Like, I knew like they were amazing and I tried it and it was phenomenal, but I didn't know that it was brought up so heavenly and during the 1930s and before the occupation as well. As like they also have what did I read about the olives and the grapes as well, the grapevines. In I believe it was in Khalil. Very amazing. They're known for their olives as well, and their grapevines, and their grapes within. And they have like 50 different types of grapes, and they have a grape festival. They used to have grape festivals in Yefa as well, and they used to bring them to Al Khalil from the Al Khalil. So I feel like that's stuff that's not talked about and that's not really brought into our attention at all. And I feel like that's something that we should be proud of that part of our culture.
Well, that's right. It was the Palestinians who made the desert bloom. So that's what we've got to remind people that that's indeed what happened. Yeah, it's fascinating. And one of the other observations that many people have made is that, of course, because of its geographic location, Palestine was also just so central in terms of the passage of cultures and traditions and commerce and so on. So it was really has always been historically a crossroads. Well, the Levant region overall, but especially mm-hmm. Palestine. And that also brings such a rich heritage to Palestinian culture and traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, like, I didn't even know about the grapevines being popular in Khalil. So it's just the little things in Palestine that make you, that's your background, it makes you who you are, but it's the little things that are typically forgotten about that need to be shed light on. And I feel like people would find that so interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely important to promote that. And I love that you're working on a post right now to share this stuff. Malek, I know you've been also very active as a student when it comes to the Palestinian cause, and you're also part of KW Palestine, which is a community group for Kitchener and Waterloo Palestinians. How was the experience like?
So as a student, most of my experiences were in either the UWSFPR, which is the University of Waterloo Students for Palestinian Rights. My siblings actually opened it in 2014, and I think I just kind of want to take that.
I love that it runs in the family.
That's great.
Yeah. And I just want to take that on a little mm-hmm. bit. And thankfully it was pretty good for a couple of years, but then COVID hit and that kind of put us in a damp. But then after that, I wanted to, the reason that I co-founded KW Palestine was because during the attacks on Gaza in May 2021 mm-hmm. and during what was happening with Sheikh Jarrah and evictions, our university didn't allow us to hold protests. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got that initiative. I was just like, okay, they're not going to allow us to hold protests. I don't want to keep on delaying, holding protests or making noise about this issue. So I decided, I got a group of people from the UWSFPR and I was like, who's willing to do this with me? Mm-hmm. Let's start a community organization. And then we can start it off by putting out this protest, and then from there holding more community events and holding more protests that educate the people around us about Palestine, the issues. And whenever it's needed to hold protests or whenever it's needed to hold community events, we will be mm-hmm. there.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So we held it in May 2021, and it's been a great experience so far. And we got great support. We have, I think, around 1,200 followers. It's been exactly a year, so we're trying mm-hmm. to get a little bit more to 2,000 by the end of the summer. But a lot of people even came, and we've joined a lot of community members even help mm-hmm. with our protests. Even sometimes we just have community events in the uptown Waterloo area, which like allow people to learn more about Palestine mm-hmm. And what's occurring there. So I think that's part. We're just making a community gather. Yeah.
And is it targeted towards the youth or like anybody?
Anybody. So it's more general. Mm-hmm. And it's also trying to target Canadian communities as well, non-Palestinians, to make them understand more about what's happening in Palestine. And that's what we need, right?
Yeah.
That solidarity within people. And that's, I think, what we're trying to do with KW Palestine. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's amazing. And it actually sounds like KW Palestine has like ballooned like way beyond what the student group could have ever done or could have ever tried, huh?
It's true, yeah. We were very limited with our UWSFPR. They didn't really allow us to do much. And whenever we did want to hold events, it was very, it was a struggle because they would delay our event days. We had to take in forms and they would delay those forms. They would put us in smaller rooms than what we wanted. And it was a struggle. And I'm hoping that next year though, UWSFPR can get back up and running and going.
Yeah. Hopefully it will. I know at Western University in London, Ontario, they were also very slow when it came to clubs and doing all this stuff and managing it. I think it's because of COVID and going back into like the routine. So hopefully we'll go back up and running.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it might also be a model though for student activism. I mean, given that there is so much, so many obstacles put in the path of Palestinian solidarity.
You know what, perhaps,
groups,
yeah.
That maybe a model is to say, okay, fine. If the university puts so many obstacles up in front of us,
yeah,
let's just do something in the broader community, and the students can still come. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. Sorry, Nora. I hope I didn't interrupt you there.
No, you didn't. But I want to know. Did you ever receive, other than that, did you ever receive backlash for the activism that KW does?
Yeah, we did a lot. I think it's mostly from the media that comes from it.
Really?
About the protests in May, the media just didn't get our story out as what we wanted it to be. It was more of they were very on the neutral grounds and more of they felt like it wasn't as peaceful as a protest as we tried to be. And I think a part of the way that they wanted to stop us was by giving out tickets to a lot of people, even though we did a car rally, which was the whole point of a car rally because it was during COVID, there was still a lockdown. They were trying to be as safe as possible. But even with the car rally, they decided to give a lot of people tickets within our communities. Within our community members, and I felt like that was their just way of trying to stop us. But yeah.
You know, it's funny how you mentioned that about they're saying it was you said something along the lines they didn't like the quote unquote violence, and I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but I've noticed a lot of times when in Montreal where I'm based, we'll do demonstrations, and of course there's no reason for there to be violence or anything. And if they cover it, they'll say, well, and there wasn't any, they'll say, you know, there was a demonstration for Palestinian rights, they won't say that. The pro-Palestinian supporters came out and thankfully there wasn't any violence, as if somehow inherently Palestinian protesters are violent. And of course, but then when you have violence or intensity or something like that, or anger, then they criticize you for having it. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, not easy.
Yeah. Go ahead. Did you ever feel like suppressed or challenged when it comes to holding them, aside from like the neutrality of the media?
It was mostly from the city itself. The suppression came from. We even had to cancel one of our protests. We were trying. We did a protest. We wanted to do a protest. I think it was during August, I believe. Mm-hmm. But we had to cancel it because the city didn't end up accepting it, which is honestly on our fault to even ask the city if we can hold the protest.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the biggest things. And even during our time in university, a lot of the times that the backlash that we would leave during student clubs was from students that would come up and try to either disrupt our events or either if we have like a table booth or something, they would disrupt those. We've had it multiple times from students.
Yeah.
And they come like with a script. I feel like I've said this before. They come with a script to try to cut us down every point. So I feel like we even had to educate the student.
Yeah.
The student members with us that were in our club about Palestinian history, just so they're prepared for the questions or for the backlash that they're going to receive.
You know, it's crazy that you mentioned that because I feel like I've had very similar experiences on my campus as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just disappointing to see that, you know, we're just two out of many probably out there that are also being challenged by other student people on campus grounds or by the university itself or the community.
Yeah. Well, and keep in mind, it's not just by chance. So, mm-hmm. so the pro-Israel groups will coach these pro-Israel students and sort of say, well, this is a really tough question for them to answer. What about Hamas? And why hasn't Hamas renounced terrorism? And do you support Hamas? And they have all these pet questions. But I think Malik's response is the essence, right? Is that you have to educate people.
Yeah.
And the good that comes out of it is that you have people like Malik who say, okay, well, let's sit down and let's help. Let's lay out some talking points and the responses to these sort of pet questions from the other side and make sure. And of course, the other side uses all sorts of things. When you actually try to pin them down, I've encountered some of these people. When you try to pin them down and they see where you're going, then they jump to another one of their pet questions. So they're just always sort of forcing you to run after them.
Yeah.
But it's great. And I think I sort of feel like Sporas is almost like the outgrowth of obviously Malik, this need that you've seen that, you know, young people need to be educated about the conflict, about who they are, about the traditions and everything.
Mm-hmm. Malik, before we end our conversation, I want to ask, can you give me advice to Palestinian university students and others who are interested in our cause? What do you advise them to do to spread awareness when it comes to Palestine?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things is that people are afraid to just start it, just start an organization, just start your community, wherever country, city, university you are from, just find a way to bring in Palestinian youth together or non-Palestinian youth and just raise the voice of Palestine and the struggles of unliberated people everywhere, colonized people everywhere. I feel like that's something that we need to be heard. You know, we need to make our space known. We need to make sure, okay, we're there. They need to see us everywhere, you know, to make sure that we're making noise. Right. Even with UWSFPR, by the last year, we were like four people and I was the only Palestinian, but that didn't matter. That was like the most important thing was to make noise, to make sure that we walked down, like to make sure that the people that did come up to us in our booth are positive that that their words didn't hurt us or the way that they stomped our events didn't knock us down, you know, just that we're there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And how, if I can jump in with one more question, how would you like people to engage with Sporas? I mean, I know you have an Instagram account, but in your ideal vision for Sporas, sort of in the coming weeks and months, how would you like people to sort of engage with your initiative here?
So one of the things I just want to make sure that the people are getting educated by what I'm putting out, like make sure that it's useful and it's something that's being used with the youth. And I also want to know what they want to learn more about Palestine, because that's also something that could be a good question to ask. Like, do you guys want to learn about our clothes, our dances, our cities, everything, you know, our fruits, like I was saying, like everything. I feel like that's something that I comment on any post that you guys want. DM me. I don't
That's right.
Let me know what you would like to learn more about and what you want to see in your community events as well. That's what I'm trying to work on as well. Yeah.
And are you interested in sort of other Sporas groups springing up or any vision to sort of how far or how wide this can go, or you're just going to wait and
definitely.
See?
Definitely. Wherever you are, if you want to have a Sporas group, go ahead.
I mean, the main motive, like the main thing at the end of the day is spreading the Palestinian culture and identity and get Palestinians back to learn about their roots. So wherever Sporas is created, honestly, would just create a huge community of people who are proud to be Palestinian and proud to support the Palestinian cause. So that would be such a beautiful thing to see it happening in the next upcoming years. Yeah. And I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm hoping it carries on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll point out to Malik's point there. She does on one of her Instagram posts, she does ask people that if they have you know, comments and questions and suggestions to go ahead and post it right to the, I guess, the Instagram post, right? To make a comment on that Instagram post. So there is a definite channel for the audience to get back to Malek on those things. And as I think we said earlier, we will have a link to Sporas in the episode notes here for the podcast.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, it saddens me to say this, but this is the end of our podcast with Malek El-Batroukh. Thank you so much for joining us today, Malek. It was a pleasure to speak to you and learn all about Spora Scattered and the work that you're doing. It is truly great to see young people being active when it comes to spreading knowledge about the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian identity. So I commend you for that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, to be honest, and it was a great conversation to be had. Yeah.
Thank you. For more information about Spora Scattered, visit the link provided on the podcast platform page. Well, if you've listened this far into the podcast, well, good for you. You're slowly diving into the realm of all things Palestinian Canadian. If you enjoyed listening to us speak about different topics regarding Palestine and Canada, leave us a review. We would love to hear your feedback. If you have suggestions for a future podcast episode, also let us know. This podcast is a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, CJPME, and seeks to advance its mission to empower Canadians of all backgrounds to promote justice, development, and peace in the Middle East. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions about our podcast or our topics, please feel free to email us at atpc@cjpme.org. Thanks to all our supporters who helped to make this podcast and all CJPME's other activities possible. Well, I hate to leave you guys, but this is it for now. You will hear from us on our next episode.